Hi, I'm Dr. Naomi Potter and I'm a menopause specialist. We see lots of women in clinic with a multitude of symptoms, but it can be quite hard to know what you're looking out for. So one thing that I think is really important is for any woman to know what to look for so that they can then be guided as to whether or not the symptoms that they're experiencing are perimenopause and menopause. So if I see somebody in clinic, I run through a series of questions that enables me to come to a conclusion about whether or not I think the most likely diagnosis is perimenopause and menopause. And the first thing that I normally ask is somebody's age. And we always say that menopause does not exclusively affect women of the age of 51. And certainly perimenopause can start in the decade beforehand, but it can actually affect women who are much, much younger. And it's not uncommon to see women in their 40s, and we still see women in their 30s and sometimes even younger. So if any of the symptoms that I talk about today are affecting you, then there is always the possibility that it's menopause or hormonal, and it's something that you should ask your doctor to investigate further. So where we normally start with a clinic consultation is there's always something that's brought a woman in. So there's something that they're worried about, or they're experiencing new symptoms, or something's changed. And we normally start with just a very open conversation as to why are you here? What's worrying you? What are you experiencing? And this is where there is just such a vast array of symptoms that no two women are the same. So some women come in because their periods have changed, or they've got hot flushes and night sweats, and then that makes the diagnosis really pretty easy, especially if they're over the age of 45. But there are other symptoms that a lot of women don't even realise are associated with hormonal changes that we also ask about, even if they don't volunteer it. And this is because estrogen, or a lack of estrogen or fluctuating estrogen, affects pretty much every organ system. So they can be literally anything, but if we start at the top, probably the easiest way of doing it is to start at the top of the body and work down. So some women come in complaining about eye changes, whether that's dry eyes, watery eyes, hearing changes, tinnitus, vertigo. A lot of women complain about mouth symptoms, so burning tongue, dry mouth, dentition changes, skin changes, palpitations, gut changes, and sometimes it's constipation, sometimes it's kind of reflux symptoms, musculoskeletal pains, vaginal symptoms, so burning, pain with intercourse, vaginal discharge, libido issues, and then further down your body, there's issues that can particularly affect your feet, like plantar fasciitis. There are so many. And those are just the physical symptoms, and I definitely haven't even named half of them. But probably the most common and possibly the most distressing are the psychological symptoms that are associated. And they can be so extreme that some women come to our clinic practically suicidal or even suicidal. And this can be a range of things like low mood, loss of motivation, terrible anxiety, crippling anxiety so that you can't even leave the house. And then things that can mimic dementia, so things like word finding difficulties, brain fog, a loss of confidence. And these can affect you not only in the fact that you've got debilitating symptoms, but they can massively affect your whole life because of the knock-on impact at work and your professional capabilities, but also in terms of your relationship. There's one in particular, which is rage, which has a particular impact on relationships because you all of a sudden can't tolerate your husband anymore, or you're screaming at your children all the time, or your fuse at work is so much less than it was before. And these have massive, massive impacts that really need identifying so that we can help these women not lose their relationship and not lose their jobs. So in summary, those are some of the typical symptoms that we ask about. And depending on what the woman volunteers, we will elaborate and find out more. And that itself gives us more information. And then we move on to other medical conditions that woman has in particular. And what's important here is that we can put everything into a context as to whether or not it's likely to be something related to that condition, or whether menopause might make that worse, or whether the underlying condition might make their menopause worse, and whether there is then any limitations to what we can use to help. So we particularly ask about other gynecological conditions, so things like endometriosis and fibroids, whether someone's PMS has suddenly appeared or whether it's got worse, any breast disease, particularly history of breast cancer, things like clots in the leg that have gone to the lungs, migraines, thyroid issues. Those would be the big conditions that we would ask about first and foremost, but we also take a very detailed past medical history about anything that woman has experienced in her lifetime. We would then ask about medications, because it's important to know whether she's taking any medications that may possibly interact with HRT, or whether they might interact with any other medication that we might give. And it also just gives us a good indication as to whether her other underlying medical conditions are well controlled, or how much medical input they need to be controlled. And we then ask about allergies, and then a very important area that we need to ask about, which is what her lifestyle is like. Does she rely on caffeine, sugar, smoking, alcohol to medicate her symptoms? Does she eat well? Does she exercise? And you can then formulate, you get a really good idea as to where you can make potential lifestyle changes to improve somebody's symptoms and overall health. We also ask about family history, and so we can really glean as to whether, say, somebody in the family had a significant menopause issue. But also importantly is risks of things like breast cancer. Does breast cancer run in the family? Does ovarian cancer run in the family? And equally, does heart disease or osteoporosis? Because all of these will form a picture as to which way you're going to go with treatment. But also, if you have a woman in front of you who has seen close relatives go through breast cancer at an early age, she will have a fixed or a more firm idea about what she wants in terms of treatment as to somebody else who's potentially seen family members go through debilitating osteoporosis at an early age. So when we've discussed all of that, we then come up with a plan depending upon what she has said, and also depending upon what her ideas and concerns and expectations and wishes are, which is why no two women are ever the same. And depending on all of that, we may come up with a plan to start HRT. And if so, we will then go through all of the different varieties of HRT and come up with the most appropriate version for her. We may decide to do some blood tests. And normally we would do this in a younger woman, especially if we wanted to exclude other underlying health conditions. Or we may ask her to go away and find some more information about things that have gone on in her medical history. So again, like, no two women are the same. But hopefully this will just highlight exactly the reason why you can't say this is the right thing to do in menopause or this is the wrong thing to do, because everybody is so different, and it's so important to take the time to get a complete history, and then you can decide what is right for that individual in front of you. So one of the things that does change in perimenopause and menopause women is hair, and it can diffusely thin. So women just think that, or they just see when they're in the shower or on their hairbrushes, that there's lots of hair down, been washed out when you're washing your hair. And you can see it noticeably, particularly on your parting or at the front. It can also become very brittle, and so it breaks off. So as well as it becoming kind of diffusely thin, you can notice that the bottom can kind of look a little bit kind of shaggy, and it can become dry. And so all of those things just contribute to a lack of fullness and luster like how it used to be. And using good shampoos and conditioners can help to a degree, and making sure that you eat a balanced diet can help, making sure that you're not deficient in any particular vitamin or mineral, and sometimes using HRT can improve your hair quality. One thing to note though is if you notice that you have particular discrete kind of circular areas of baldness where there is no hair at all, or whether you have you notice that your hairline is receding back from the front, it's important to see a dermatologist, because those are different diagnoses and they will be able to help you with that. So you may have noticed your skin changing. A lot of women say that they wake up one morning and they look in the mirror and they don't recognise the person that is looking back at them. And that is due to the effects of first fluctuating and then declining hormone levels. So you can develop adult acne, where you have spots develop that you've never even necessarily had them before. And there's a particular type of acne called acne rosacea, where you can get redness across your cheeks and across your nose and flushing associated that can be particularly distressing. You can speak to your GP about that, and there are treatments available from them. You can also notice that there are the quality of your skin can change. So if you have oily skin, it can become drier. If you had dry skin, it can become even more dry. Sometimes if you had dry skin, it can become oilier. And you notice a kind of loss of elasticity and a sagging and development of fine lines. And because of the way that estrogen can impact on our bone structure, even your bones and the framework that your face sits on can also change. And some of these things you can do things about it. Again, HRT helps, but also maintaining body weight. So if you lose body weight, you can lose the infrastructure underneath your skin, on your face particularly. Looking after your skin, protecting it from the sun, and making sure that you use a good moisturiser if your skin is particularly dry can also help. Our skin quality will change with age. So no matter whether you're a man or a woman and how old you are, our skin quality changes with age. But what you can notice, particularly in perimenopause and menopause, is a speeding up of that process over a short period of time with that fluctuation and then sudden decline in hormones. So a loss of libido is something that you can notice in perimenopause and menopause. Libido is very multifactorial. The influences, what influences your libido, it's not just hormones. It is definitely how long you've been in a relationship, whether you're getting on with your partner, what other life stresses you have. But conversely, hormones definitely can play a part. And we see a loss of libido most commonly, but conversely, there is some women who notice an increase in libido, and that's presumably because of the shift in relationship between estrogens and testosterone or androgens, the other main sex hormone group. And that can be just as distressing as a low libido. And again, there are things that can be done to help if you go and see your doctor, but it's worth noticing that you are not alone if that is your experience, because we do see that in perimenopause and menopause. So I've talked about a range of psychological symptoms that can be apparent in perimenopause. And one of them is loss of motivation, which can be quite hard to pinpoint. And so some women just don't feel like themselves, or they just feel like they haven't got the same, they don't get the same joy out of doing things that they normally did, or they just can't be bothered to do things that they don't absolutely have to. And that can be related to socializing. So some women just retreat and don't get that same joy out of going out and seeing their friends and socializing. And it can also be at work, and that can be particularly worrying because it means that you've lost your drive to achieve at work in the same way that you used to, and that has got big implications. And it can be very distressing for women who suddenly feel like they are just not themselves, or you don't feel like you are yourself anymore. And that can all be down to perimenopause and menopause. So you may have heard the term brain fog being used when women are describing their perimenopause symptoms. And it takes different forms. Really, it's different for every individual, but it can be simply that your brain just doesn't work in the way that you want or expect it to, or like it has done in the past. So some examples are where you are, say, driving home and you forget the way home, or you walk into a room and you forget why you've gone in there, or you can't remember your own surname, or you stand up to give a speech and you can't find the words that you need to in order to present what you need to. And so it can take a number of different forms, but essentially is where your brain just doesn't work as quickly or sharply as it used to. And again, this has got huge connotations because we rely on our brains for working, for getting around, for looking after ourselves and our dependents. And when it doesn't work, it can be very frightening. So a lot of women think that they have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or early Alzheimer's. Some women think that they've got a brain tumour. And actually, this is just fluctuating and declining hormones. And for most women, it does get better. So it can get bad and then it can get better on its own. HRT can help. Tricks and introducing a framework into your life can also massively help. So some women, you know, use loads of post-it notes. Other women make lists. There are ways of helping, but just to know that you're not alone and that there are things that can be done, I think can be really helpful. If you've noticed that you have become more allergic to things that you weren't previously, that can also be a sign of perimenopause and menopause. And this could be allergies to foods, to skin products. Sometimes you never get to the bottom of what's causing your reaction. It can be a skin reaction, so you can develop itchy rashes, hives. You can get a gut reaction, so certain food types or even just stress can elicit a change in bowel habits. You can suddenly end up with terrible diarrhea. It can take the form of so many different things, and it can just be true allergy. So you didn't have an allergy before, there is a trigger and then you have an allergy to it, or it can be completely unknown, which is more in the realms of something called histamine sensitivity, whereby in perimenopause, for whatever reason, and nobody can really work out why, you can be triggered into releasing more histamine, which is associated with allergies. And it can be very hard to manage because you would think logically that the treatment would be to give estrogen to replace what was declining, but actually giving estrogen can actually make it worse. So it can be very challenging to manage, but it's just something to be aware of. So you might be asking yourself, is what I'm experiencing perimenopause, or is it just aging? But they are not independent of each other. And so what you can sometimes find is that what perimenopause does is it just exaggerates the normal aging process. And yes, perimenopause is also normal, but it can speed it up. And so if you take HRT, for example, and you replace those hormones, it can slow that process down. And that's that is a very individual decision as to how you view that process. So some people say that that's over-medicalizing and it's a natural process and should be allowed to continue, whereas others very, very strongly feel that they should be able to do whatever they want in order to slow down that aging process. So if you are listening to this and you're experiencing any of the symptoms that I've discussed today, then the first step would be to visit your GP. And if you feel the need or that it would be of support, then taking somebody with you for that consultation can be really helpful. Making sure that you've got plenty of time, potentially you've written down a list of not only your symptoms, but also what your hopes are from that consultation, because you're likely to have not very long with your doctor, and it's useful for you to have thought in advance about whether you want to try HRT, whether you want to discuss the alternatives, whether you want reassurance that there's not something else going on, all of these things, so that if you articulate that to your doctor, you're much more likely to have a successful consultation. So during perimenopause and menopause, there is a turbulent fluctuation in hormone and then leading to a decline in hormones, and that's estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. And so the aim of HRT is to flatten any fluctuations and to top up your declining hormones. And there are different products, different dosages, different routes of administration, but as a overall definition, HRT means hormone replacement therapy, and it is replacing those declining hormones. So I think women are notoriously bad at putting themselves first and actually looking after themselves and taking the time to address a problem, and they will always, something else will often take precedence, whether it's, you know, the kids or the job or parents or partner or whatever. So if when they finally get in front of you in clinic and they say, oh, I just wasn't sure whether I was bad enough, or am I bad enough? Like, there's no criteria as to what is bad enough. If you have debilitating symptoms or they are interfering with your life, then it's bad enough. You know, even if they're not particularly interfering with your life, but you don't like them, then you're totally justified in seeking an opinion. So I've talked quite a lot about different symptoms that you might be experiencing, but you may have more questions. So if you have any questions, please feel free to email me on naomipotterpodcast@gmail.com or post them in the comments below.